The following program is sponsored by Merv Haber Esquire of Haber DePaul LLC. The views expressed do not necessarily reflect those of this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group.
All right, ladies and gentlemen around the Delaware Valley, welcome to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. Got a fantastic show, top real estate show in the city of Philadelphia, the city of brotherly love. Great to be here, nice and warm in the studio with Merv. How are you, sir?
I'm very well, and I like that segue into the city of brotherly love, because today we're going to talk about the unfortunate side of real estate, and we're going to look at it from both the consumer and from the realtor perspective. We're going to be talking about real estate or consumer complaints in pre, post, and during real estate transactions. Some of the most common reasons that people have issues. Now, if we're talking about Pennsylvania and most parts of New Jersey, which is our coverage area, Joe, every real estate standard PAR or association or realtor agreement is going to have a mediation clause. Some of the most common issues are where somebody made a deposit, put a deposit down on a property. There was some sort of misrepresentation or dissatisfaction with the transaction as it was going on. And there's usually a argument over who keeps the deposit monies in the event a transaction goes bad. The seller will say that the buyer breached. The buyer will say the seller breached. In cases like that, let's say, for example, the real estate company is holding the money in escrow because it can't be distributed until there's actually a settlement at closing. What they'll do is they'll go to mediation or they'll work out an agreement. Most of the time, when a real estate transaction, at least at the beginning stages, does not get the settlement, there is a meeting of the minds, and it's an amicable return of the deposit.
Let me ask you a question. It's just from a layman's perspective, because it is very interesting. I'd like to know, for example, the many types of reasons. And the reason I ask that question is this. Imagine if somebody didn't read the contract, which I'm sure happens all day long, and you as the buyer are required to disclose some things, but you didn't read the contract. So now all of a sudden something goes bad, and now all of a sudden you got yourself a situation.
I hate to say it, but if you don't read the contract or you don't hire an attorney for legal advice, then it's caveat emptor, because it says a lot of transactions, there's a waiting period. A lot of times you have a, buyer's remorse period, I call it, and they have several days to look it over. There's also most of those, as is real estate deals, have a contingency clause for mortgages and inspections.
Right.
And you've seen inspections where there was a failure to disclose, let's say, a leaking septic tank. That can cause litigation. So you segued nicely. They did a survey, a national study, and this is not local to Philadelphia. These are national complaints of what people were angry about in their transactions. The most common complaints involved septic systems, solar leases. We did a program on that. They're tricky. Failure to disclose on the seller's property disclosure. Water rights, if it's streams. A miscommunication or a misunderstanding in a text or an email. Agent-owned property, that he or she acts as their own realtor for their own transaction. Multiple offers. Who gets who? Who gets it? Unpermitted work where there was no zoning or there was no permits, and L&I discovers that they have an illegal addition. easements, joint, who owns the joint driveway between the dominating property and the abutting property.
Would that be a disclosure issue?
Yeah, but it also turns out to be a legal issue sometimes. Flood and fire zones. Because if you're in a flood zone, you've got to have special FEMA flood insurance. Oil and gas rights, you know, especially out west where you have fracking or you have other things that are important. MLS issues, such as, I don't like the way you presented my home, or I don't like the use of drone photos because they're showing my kids playing in the backyard, or, you know, my car collection or whatever. Earnest money and waiver of deadlines.
Drone?
Right, drone photos. When you go on the Bright MLS, it's a multiple listing service, and I apologize to the listeners that I did not, and I'm using these you know, acronyms, and I should explain what they are. MLS is the standard where you get the most coverage for your listing. Right. It's put out there, and it's looked at.
Multiple listings?
Yes. And then, of course, there's what happens before the property goes to settlement. Now, in these errors and omissions, it can be very challenging. It's not so much that there's a complaint, but a lot of times the realtor is caught between the rock and the proverbial hard place. And as you know, I represent realtors, but I also represent consumers. But in fairness to real estate professionals, garbage in, garbage out. You have a client who is less than honest or has problems with disclosure. The real estate professional, because they've listed the property and they may have a duty to use reasonable due diligence to make sure that the listing they have put up there is true and correct, but there's always a caveat. This listing is true and correct based upon the facts and the information received at the time of the listing. Realtor makes no representation as to what the advertisement or the listing actually states.
Now, does the real estate professional normally just go on the word of a client, or do they do due diligence and make sure?
No, they do, but even with due diligence, sometimes things happen. For example, let's say sellers want to reserve water rights, and the realtor says, "Well, did you reserve the water rights?" And the seller says, "Nah, I didn't sell the water rights. I don't know what you're talking about. It may not have been the present owner. The water rights may have been sold well before." And I'll give you an example. In New Jersey, particularly, they have an overlay. They have a large map in Trenton. And riparian rights can be purchased and sold. And what happened was, we were selling a commercial property down at the shore in Brigantine. And we did our due diligence as the attorney. I contacted Trenton, the state board. And sure enough, there was an ancient stream under the diner that had never been compensated for. And it held up the sale for a while because there was a discussion or negotiation between who was responsible to purchase the riparian rights from the state. And it was a parking lot, Joe. That ancient stream is probably buried under, you know, five tons of asphalt.
That's incredible.
But they have this big overlay, and when somebody purchases the riparian rights, they block it off. And even in the 21st century, there's still riparian rights that are still at large.
How many people would never, you know, regular lay people, never even heard that term?
Riparian rights.
Right.
Well, it's water rights, basically.
Okay.
But you also have, you know, you also have other issues. Like, we touched upon this in a separate program And we can spend a whole another program on solar panels and leases. But you should know, if it's a lease, if you buy a house with the solar panels, you undertake the lease. But upon sale or termination of the contract, the solar company gets to take the panels back. And they will come and remove the panels, or they'll require an immediate payoff per the contract, just like a lease. At the lease, you got a closed-ended lease. You know, you lease your car for 4 years, you're paying $500 a month. There's a buyout, let's say $20,000. If you don't pay the $20,000 for the buyout, you surrender the car.
Right.
And that's the same thing. And here's the thing. So when you see the solar panels, the other thing is the buyer is also responsible to repair the roof after the removal. Solar panels are attached to your roof. If you read some of these leases, it says that the owner is responsible for all, you know, consequential damages.
How often do situations like this?
It doesn't happen very often.
I was going to say, because if would that be a conversation that somebody would look at the roof and say, "I'm buying this. What's the situation with that?"
Yeah. And then you also have the other ones, failure to disclose and seller's property disclosures. Now, this is a common complaint. Now, have you ever seen a seller's disclosure statement?
I may have seen one, but I haven't read it through.
It's got maybe 2 dozen pages. They ask about septic system. They ask about the hot water heater. Now, let's say you're a developer and you're flipping homes. And you put, "I don't know, unknown." Well, the realtor who lists the property looks at the disclosure statement and says, "How come you don't know how old the roof is?" I said, "Because I bought the property on foreclosure and we put in $100,000 to rehab it, and now we're selling it. A flip." So that happens a lot. Now, the cases circle around whether you know. See, a lot of times you'll get complaints the alleger broker should have known. Well, that's not the law. Like I said, in defense of realtors, you have to educate the claimants or the claimant's attorney on what the statute actually requires. But then, you know, that's where it goes. That's where the race is on, where they try to show the broker had actual knowledge and did not disclose. But that is an issue which remains outstanding. One of these issues of failure to disclose involve water intrusion or mold. A lot of times somebody will say, "Hey, you know what?" The realtor will come in and say, "Look, this place is really filthy. Let's slap on a new layer of paint. We'll make it look shiny." You know, the old adage, Joe, paint hides all the sins.
Right.
Well, sometimes it can cause liability. And I have a case right now. It's down the shore in Cape May Courthouse, where somebody purchased a shore home. It looked nice and spanking fresh new, and there should have been a tip off from the buyers, because they used Kilz, the KILZ paint, which hides against mold and mildew. It's a cover up. And what happened was within 2 weeks of them going into the home, their contractor's peeling up the floor, and there's black mold all underneath the tile.
Oh my God! What does that mean to the house? Does that mean
black mold has been found to have, it could have, like aspergillus? And I am not a expert remediator or a scientist, but these can be harmful to humans. It can cause sickness. They can infiltrate into your lungs. Can cause all sorts of respiratory illnesses, and of course, because it's airborne, it's not visible. Those cases are the ones that property disclosure cases where things really start to go off the
rails. Okay, so yeah, and I'd like to know that, because I'm picturing myself and my family. We buy a house. Okay, maybe we're not wealthy, but we spent every penny we could. We did it, and then we find out that, okay. By the way, two things. Now, I have to get a lawyer. Of course, I'm getting the best lawyer on the planet, Merv Haber. But, you know, as grateful as I am to have Merv, you know, I'm paying Merv, but does somebody reimburse me for paying Merv now that I got to go to court because...
Well, we're going to get to that, the remedies.
Okay.
Under the... at times, there are clauses that can be put in the contract that said, in the event of a dispute, attorney's fees can be recompensed. But a lot of times, courts say, well, you know, it's a breach of contract case. In a breach of contract case, all sides, unless specifically designated, have to pay.
Could that be fraud though? Could that be fraud in a sense? Like, you know.
And if that triggers the Unfair Trade Practices Act as applied to real estate, or there's an ethical complaint filed with the Attorney General of Pennsylvania, which we'll get to, that changes the whole paradigm in reference to complaints. But right now we're just talking about buyer, seller have a dispute. They go to mediation. It's tried to be resolved. In the event mediation does not resolve it, the parties are free to seek a additional remedy in the courts.
Okay.
Now, here, which now segues into the next biggest complaint, miscommunications from a team member. Remember, we had a couple of shows where you have the real estate company, let's say Keller Williams, and then they have teams.
Right.
They have the Joe Doc team.
But that's a great team, as we all know. But.
The Joe Doc team has three or four other realtors, and the whole point of having a team is because real estate has become a little more complex, we have disclosures, we have inspections, we have deadlines. A lot of individual realtors, if they have a busy office, they need a team. They have more than one player. They have more than one player there. So they will hire other agents that work under their team.
Right.
But let's say there was a miscommunication between the realtor who listed the property and who had the contract and a team member. Here, let's say you had, here's the times. And a lot of times this happens when agents are very busy or they're in a rush. All right. For example, hey, can you send me the information that you've got for the condo property? What were the rentals? What were the days of occupancy? What did you charge? What was the high-low seasons, et cetera, and so forth? Unfortunately, when the stuff is sent over, guess what happened? They sent it for the wrong property. So, because there were two condo buildings side by side, and they were numbered the same, except the condos were not all the same size. So my client, the broker, had one condo listed, and they were on the same floor, but it had different unit numbers. So the one that went under contract was the smaller unit. So now you've got disclosure of, let's say, a 2,000-square-foot condo versus a 1,500-square-foot condo. The buyer's agent calls and says, hey, send me over their rental history and so forth. And then when they get the rental history, they realize it's 30% less than the other unit.
It reminds me of...
classic case of miscommunication. And that's not intentional. That's an absolute just mere negligence. But that is an actionable example.
So you know what it reminds me of? And it sounds... We do a lot of, as you know, we do a lot of other types of legal radio. It reminds me of a medical malpractice where they take the wrong,
you take out the wrong leg. You take out the right kidney instead of the left one.
Exactly.
Yeah. But unfortunately, I'm not even going to try to compare.
Oh, no.
Commercial real estate with medical negligence.
Right.
That's a animal of its own. But it's a fair analogy, yes.
And I only said because it could be an accident, may not be intentional, right. But nonetheless, it's a problem.
Now, the other problem that I've had is how about agent-owned property sales? Agents invest, whatever, and they say, "Hey, you know, I'm the agent. I'm going to be the agent. I'm the agent owner. I'm going to take care of this." Now, in many policy manuals, there may be a requirement for additional or closer supervision. But let's face it, we all get busy. And unfortunately, regular supervision is just looking at the file. So the broker of record, who may be handling dozens of transactions every month, you know, literally millions of dollars in gross sales, it turns out that if the owner agent makes a mistake, there's no oversight because the seller is the agent. Owner is the seller.
Right.
It's
a conflict of interest?
So it's not a conflict of interest. Listen, as an attorney, I can represent my own interests.
But you don't have a checks and balances. Nobody's checking, you know, that what right. you're doing, even if it's...
And 99% of these are perfectly fine. But when you see a lot of agent-owned property claims because the agent who also owned the property and would have known the entire history of the property, including what maintenance was done, what was fixed, and so forth. There's no duty to disclose. We didn't have any actual knowledge. Well, just guess what? As an agent, you're held to a higher standard. Like, for example, an attorney looks at a contract and says, "Well, you know, this contract's terrible, Your Honor." And he said, "Well, why did you sign it? You're deemed to have some remedial understanding." Even if you don't practice in transactional work, lawyers are held to a higher standard on contracts because they may not know the subject matter, but they know what to do and who to talk to. So I know you want to save money, and an agent-owned sale means they don't have to pay 6% or whatever the percentage
right,
is
to a third party,
to another realtor. They save money on the transaction, almost like a FSBO. These things happen with for sale by owners too.
Okay.
Right? You know, that's become popular because people don't want to pay a commission. House, median price house, if you remember from a couple months ago, we talked, is in the United States, is almost $460,000. So 8% of that is, you're talking about $40,000 commission or something. So somebody wants to save $40,000, they're going to FSBO it.
But don't they open themselves up if they're not really experienced to making all kinds of mistakes?
When I do get a FSBO client or someone asks me to review a FSBO contract, my advice is this is absolutely as is. The parties understand that the seller is not a real estate or legal professional, has limited knowledge, and is making representations to the best of their ability. You are advised to do whatever proper due diligence required as the buyer of the property.
Do you more normally, if somebody's doing a FSBO, do they normally bring an attorney in? Okay, in other words, what they save, you know, like in other words, what they're saving in that percentage, they can now afford to pay an attorney, obviously much less than $40,000.
Yeah, and people ask me, what's the average price for an attorney to review a contract, shepherd a buyer through the process, and then attend closing? Generally, it's between $1,000 and $2,000, and it's because it doesn't require that much. If there's an issue with the inspection, or there's other issues that we've been talking about, that will be more. But generally, like I said, I just don't understand people's. Their biggest individual purchase.
We talk about it all the time.
I keep hammering it to our listeners because it's still going on. It's still happening. It's purely an economic issue. People don't see a tangible value sometimes. Well, all the attorney did was read it over. I can read over the contract. Good. Best of health to you. Because eventually, when you come to my office and I have to clean up your proverbially dirty laundry, it's going to cost you more. And if you don't come to my office, you're going to go to someone else, because when you start getting summonses and subpoenas and notices, that's when reality strikes.
What is the most common okay, dispute, okay, in regards to somebody purchasing a property and all of a sudden getting a piece of mail somebody selling a property and all of a sudden getting a piece of mail that they're being sued because of something, you know, that was not meets the eye.
I would say that, thankfully, the vast majority of real estate transactions over the past 5 years, and I would put it as high as 95 to 97%, maybe even 98%, are done properly, easily, because you've got a lot of moving parts. You've got a title insurance or a title company that is overlooking the veracity of the deed because they are not going to sign off on the mortgage. The mortgage company is not going to sign off unless there is a verified, certified title report. And the title report gives the guarantee, insures the title. And that's the biggest problem. Title disputes have really been reduced in the past two generations.
Well, are most of the disputes or at least a large portion of them FSBOs?
No.
Oh, okay. That's good to
know. And you should know that most realtors have something called E&O coverage.
Right.
Errors and omissions. Well, again, we have to translate the acronyms.
Right, right.
So because they have the errors and omissions, they're generally covered, all right, under that blanket policy. But let's keep going because I find some of this stuff fascinating. We haven't talked about this. We only talk about the fuzzy side.
Okay, we got 3 minutes to the break.
Okay, let's do one more.
Yeah, please, let's do one more.
Lack of permits, L&I violations, licensing and inspections.
Okay,
this happens, all right? Especially downtown, like in South Philly or Northern Liberties or older neighborhoods that have old housing stock. Here's what happens. They bypass the building department permits that are required. They don't disclose it. They figure they're in the clear because they built the illegal addition in the backyard 20 years ago and nobody said a peep. And of course, not being professional contractors, they didn't necessarily follow building code requirements and they get shut off. So a lot of times the buyers will find something in their inspection. They'll have a contractor come out and say, and he says, well, this isn't up to code. Then they go, they check with the L&I, licensing and inspection, and they find out there was no permits for the work.
Okay. I had a conversation over Thanksgiving. This I know a lot about, okay?
This is a pretty common thing.
And it's a pretty cool discussion. So this guy is an awesome guy. He lives in a condo down the shore. Not going to mention what shore
it
is.
Yeah, no, it's good.
Okay?
Good.
And he's doing a gut out of his condo. And I said, well, is there issues with your... do you need permits? I'm not getting permits. I said, well, do you need a dumpster? Okay. And he's like, yeah, but I don't need a dumpster. I'm like, whoa, 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 whoa. I said, do you get along good with your neighbors? Okay. He seems, of course, to have it all figured out, right? And it's not putting a new addition on, but whatever he's doing, he's gotten enough to that where it probably needs, he's changing.
He needs a permit, especially if you're changing electrical around.
Right. Well, the point is that is an issue, okay. And at this situation, very, 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 So I said, well, what are you going to do with the dumpster? Okay, there's two ways. If it's commercial, your competitors are going to call on you. If it's commercial, your neighbors. I said, you got any neighbors you don't get along with? One, okay. That it's an interesting point, and the question I have is
it keeps going. So, okay, the seller loses that deal. Now, if they want to sell that property in the future, we have 30 seconds, I know that. They have to disclose that there were no permits and there are building code violations. Failing to disclose is absolute fraud. That's intentional fraud. And the realtor who originally listed the property, if they they continue to be retained, they have to disclose that, or they have to surrender the listing.
So okay.
And that's where broker beware, because a real estate agent can get sued if they have knowledge after a failed let's say there was water, there was mold in the basement, wasn't remediated, and they relist the property, failing to disclose. That broker could be liable because they colluded with the seller not to disclose a known defect in the property.
So, for example, because I'm going to talk to him about this, this is a good conversation, this is advice. So, if he's changing anything structural or electrical, okay, or if he's changing the dimensions, okay, like, you know, when he may get away with it temporarily, even if he doesn't, but when he sells it, that's when he's going to have a problem.
Yes, and that's a common problem, illegal additions. How about people where they didn't want their three-car garage, so they basically built a home office in the third garage bay? From the outside, it looks like a three-car garage, but on the inside...
Murph, let me ask you a question, because I had, at my nightclub, I'll never forget it as long as I live, you know, and I'm sure you know this, but about 23 years ago, you didn't have to turn in electrical engineered prints for your electric. You could just hot put them on a piece of paper.
If you had a contractor or a union licensed electrician, you could just do a schematic.
Well, the second build out, we saved the electrical to last because we'd like, you know, and then they changed the rules. So now you need one, yeah, okay?
That happens.
And that, of course, it caused us a heck of a problem. We had to go back and get the engineer prints. It slowed us up. But let me ask you a question. What happens, Merv, if my friend, okay, does this, you know, he does this, because I'm going to call him and talk to you, you're brilliant. So, and he doesn't disclose it, okay? And then all of a sudden he finds out from me after listening to our radio show that, you know, oh boy, you know, I should have got them. Kenny, what happens if he then calls L&I on himself?
Oh, here's the thing. He can get a rapid permit. He can have it inspected after the fact. He'll pay a fine, but they'll grant the permits if
they won't make him tear it down.
If it's bad, it depends on how many corners he cut.
Yeah.
But if it's builder grade quality and it passes inspection, he'll pay a fine and the permit.
But if he doesn't, okay, if he doesn't disclose it, it'll come back to bite him in the butt when he sells it.
If the buyer has a good inspector and they look at the plans and the footprint, or the realtor herself understands that this is not the same build quality, because you can always tell when an addition is put on a house.
I'm sure this guy's got the best. He's got a lot of money, but I don't know what he's replacing and what he's doing.
Well, let's just hope that he at least has a contract. But anyway, we have to do something. So
yeah, let's pay some bills. We're going to have more from Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB in just a minute. I mean, well, hold off for 1 second. We're going to hold off on our break just for right now. We're going to take just 2 minutes. At the end of the day, let's think about this particular situation. if you're out there, okay, and you know you're doing a job and you're not getting building permits, okay. To me personally, you're making a huge mistake. But
it's easy to find out what needs to be permitted. Okay. You can find that out from your township, and believe it or not, and people in the greater Philadelphia region should understand, Philadelphia has pretty strict mindsets. Like, for example, if you have an old fire suppression system or, you know, detectors, and they were up to code in 1995,
yeah,
and you decide to remodel, you have to remodel to the present code standards. You're not grandfathered in. You're only grandfathered in to the extent that the property is quiescent. If you do any type of improvement, that's what you have to do.
All right, so we're going to take a quick break, Merv. We're going to have more from Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour in just a minute.
Meet Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, host of Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour, a one-hour monthly broadcast on WWDB Talk 860 that features the region's premier residential and commercial real estate and real property experts and professionals. From the top real estate brokers, appraisers, and builders to highest profile mortgage brokers and professionals, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour has them all. Tune in to WWDB Talk 860 or listen online at WWDBAM.com and experience real estate like you never have before. We'll see you on the radio. Who's Merv Haber? I'm glad you asked. The host of Talk Radio's hottest new real estate show, Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour on WWDB Talk 860. Whether it's representation for a sale or purchase of a property, or consultation, preparation, or review of documents, real estate attorney Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC has the experience and expertise needed to get the deal done right. And if it's a track record for success in commercial litigation matters or pursuit of defense of property disputes, Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC is your choice to handle and represent all of your real estate and real property needs. For your residential and commercial real estate and real property needs, contact Merv Haber of Haber DePaul LLC, 215-985-1515 or 856-722-0303 or at haberdepaul.com. And do yourself a favor, call Haber and get the deal done right.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, around the Delaware Valley, welcome back to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. Man, oh man,
we're going to move on from L&I violations and permit work, but those are we're talking about things that consumers have complained about in their real estate deals. The other one is easements. Let's say you've got a joint driveway. This is not uncommon, like up in Westmount area or Germantown. These were not issues 150 years ago. So you had a carriage house in the back. That was part of the main building. But then we start subdividing. And all of a sudden, the carriage house becomes a separate two-bedroom property. There's one driveway. So the dominant property can't cut off the rights. You know what? That guy that bought my carriage house in the back, he's having wild parties. They're screaming. I'm going to put a barricade up on that driveway easement.
Oh, yeah.
The buyer of the carriage house then makes a says, what the heck's going on here? I didn't even know I only had an easement. I thought I owned, this is 50-50. Looks at the deed. Deed says it's an easement. Easements are generally permanent easements. Like, for example, if you want to hook up to municipal water, the city of Philadelphia has the right to dig up your yard and lay a pipe or a conduit right to your property line. And they will force you not to be able to put concrete or a barrier over that in case they need maintenance. What happens if the pipe bursts and they can't access it? You can flood out a whole block of people. And that's happened in Manayunk, where people's basements get flooded because there's an appurtenant pipe that's blown. Yeah, easements become litigation, unfortunately. Then, of course, you have flood zones. Well, nobody told me this was a flood zone and that I needed flood insurance. In Philadelphia, that doesn't happen because it's already blocked off. We already know what the high water tables are. And you should know, for all those people living in the hoi polloi.
Manayunk, by the way, it's a good, there's a perfect example of flooding area. Right?
Well, how about Society Hill? Society Hill was built on a landfill. They built it out. That was marshland. And, you know, Penn's Landing was a muddy landing. So over time, you get high water.
I could tell you that, but okay. So, I mean, but is that required to be in the contract? Number one, I mean, and who's negligent on that? Like, in other words,
the chances are the title company.
Okay,
title company is going to say, This property is deemed to be in a flood zone. We've flagged it. In order to have your title insurance, we're going to have proof of regular liability and casualty insurance, as well as flood insurance. That's usually taken care of. And that's why that doesn't come up that often in Philadelphia. But remember, this was a national survey. And the reason I did that was because I just felt it's good to talk about a lot of these things. Now, what about, I talked about the misleading MLS photos with the drone. Now, this is a brand new claim because we started seeing this with digital and drone photography. Or you notice how some listings, they look better than usual. You know, it's a 900 square foot house, but with the wide angle lens that their photographer's using, it looks like a bowling alley. So here's an example. And one woman, she takes a shot of the neighborhood with a drone, and in the forefront, there's this awesome rec center with this incredibly fun pool and water slide. Unfortunately, the rec center was not part of the property, and it was part of the community, and this community had another rec center or clubhouse that didn't have a pool or a slide.
So
but
it's misleading.
Because it was an aerial, the people were disappointed when they bought the house, and they went to the rec center to go use the pool, and they were told, "You're not a member." If you want to use the pool and the slide, you're going to have to pay $1,000 or whatever it was. Guess what? Lawsuit.
Merv, how long is there a statute of limitations on somebody's?
Generally, contracts in the Commonwealth are 4 years.
I ask because you know you talked about the what's the waterways, okay. Well, you might not find out about that for 10 years. Some things you might not find out about.
And there's other, I know that, but it's also discovery. It's discovery when. But remember, every single real estate contract, and we've talked about this on other shows, it's as is with exceptions. Once the keys are transferred, rescission in Pennsylvania is very difficult. You know, people move in. They're unhappy with the house. They get buyer's remorse, literally, and they want the seller to buy the house back. Doesn't happen very often, but it happens maybe less than 1% of transactions.
Well, did you watch the Eagles game a couple weeks ago when Sirianni made the decision once he found out the other team wasn't going to take the penalty? That you know,
he said, "I'll kick the field goal."
Remember, he said, he did say that. He said, but the other one was, "Now I'll take the penalty."
Yeah.
So that's kind of what we're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. So those are the types of things that can get you in trouble. Now, what happens if you go to the mediation, you're not satisfied with the result, you can't get it resolved? Well, you have several avenues. You can retain an attorney. Hopefully you retain our firm. But there's a lot of competent attorneys. So I'm not going to denigrate people that my colleagues. And you file a lawsuit. And then you have to go through a year to 3 years of discovery. You can also submit a consumer complaint with the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General. And up until 2 years ago, who was our Attorney General? Joshua Shapiro.
Josh Shapiro, right.
Our present governor. And here's how you do it. It's a lot of times it's considered an ethics complaint. So you initially can file an ethics complaint with the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors. And if you want additional information, you can call them, and I'll give the 800 number because it's a public number, 800-555-3390. And you can talk with them and their professional standards administrator. The second avenue is you can file a complaint with the State Real Estate Commission, and that's where the PA Attorney General gets involved. Because if you are a professionally licensed individual in the state, and this includes lawyers, accountants, doctors, electricians, anything, you can file in the Commonwealth with the with the Attorney General. Now, the office of the Attorney General is based in Harrisburg, and it's a law enforcement official. and they do a myriad of criminal, quasi-criminal, and civil complaints. And you know, they have criminal law division, public protection division, civil law division, Office of Public Engagement. Let's say, for example, you did a FSBO deal, and the seller said, "Yeah, I'll tell you what, give me a $50,000 deposit. We'll close on November 17th, and I'll put the money in escrow. And if it doesn't work out or your inspection, you don't like anything, I'll give you the money back." It turns out that the FSBO seller was a figment of the imagination. He basically had a similar name. His name was Robert W. Elfant. And his name was Robert M. Elfant. Close enough where it even passed the smell test of the title company.
Wow.
All of a sudden, there's no closing. 50 large is gone. Where can you go? The Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General.
Okay. How often does that... I know there are scams out there, obviously. But people actually... And they want cash. If you give them a check, isn't that traceable?
Well, yes. They ended up going after Robert W. Elfant at first. And he's saying, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even own this. I don't own this property. What are you talking about? That's not my signature. That's somebody else's signature." Identity theft, if it's done very well, is a horrible thing. So it turned out that Mr. Elfant was not responsible. And that's not his real name, by the way. But Mr. Elfant was deemed not to be responsible for that loss.
Murph, let me ask you a question. You have, and we won't disclose any real details or names, but you've been on a trial for about a month, okay?
Yes.
What type of trial? Is that a real estate type trial, or
I was going to say? No, it's a commercial. It's a commercial, a trial that happens to involve a financial services company. That's all I can say.
Okay.
Public.
I was going to say, if it's a real estate trial and it's lasting a month, okay. I was going to say that's crazy.
Well, actually, we're on hiatus until January 6th because we had to bifurcate the case.
Okay.
The jury could have mutinied. They were told it was going to be a 1 month trial. We finished the fifth week, and people were starting to drop off. This is a New Jersey case. In New Jersey, you have to have at least six jurors to deliberate a case. If you go below six, it's cause for a mistrial. Right now, we're hanging on with seven or eight. We hope that at least seven will return on January 6th. But if they don't,
you got to start over.
It's a possibility. And it's really a tough thing.
Wow.
Also, another avenue where brokers get in trouble is condominium and homeowners association documents. Now, a busy realtor, even with a team, cannot go through hundreds of pages of homeowners association. And that's why these don't happen often either, but when it does happen, it's a problem.
I've heard of these, absolutely. I've seen them on the internet where the homeowners guy, the homeowners association guy, is knocking on the door and complaining to the owner of the home that he don't have that the key, that he requires a key and can get in at any time. Some of these homeowners association rules can be really out there.
Well, there's a reason why you have to provide a proper egress, whether it's an electronic with a touchpad combination or a key. The reason is, suppose your hot water heater decides to take a hiatus, and you're on the third floor, and it starts wiping out your neighbor below and the two other units. That could have a cataclysmic failure of the entire condominium. They have to have fast egress to turn off the water main in your unit.
Are there strict rules, though, when they can use that key?
And yes, they have to give you, for example, there's annual inspections. I'll give you the city of Margate and down the shore and the city of Brigantine, or they require annual or semi-annual inspections of smoke detectors in multi-units. And the reason for that is, you know, a lot of times these are not inhabited properties. These are vacation or resort properties that are not fully inhabited. So they want to make sure that these protections are in place. The association will generally send you a notice. Please be advised that the fire marshal is coming to inspect the condominium between April 1st through April 4th. Please make sure that if you have changed your keys or your lock set or are recent purchasers of a unit, please make sure that you have given us the proper keys. Because if you don't, we will change the lock set. We will gain egress to your unit, and that will be at your expense. It'll be a special assessment to the owners.
And based on what you just said, some of these contracts, these homeowners association, can be pretty lengthy.
Yeah, they can be up. I mean, the last one I looked at was 148 pages.
Oh my God.
A lot of it is boilerplate, Joe. Don't you talk about the mandatory language that's in the universal condominium act that's, you know, been promulgated in Pennsylvania. So you have issues like that. But if you do have a problem like that, and you don't have an arbitration clause, your only egress is to file a complaint with the state regulatory agency. In Pennsylvania, it's the Office of the Attorney General. And a complaint will be filed. If the broker or the realtor has been found to be liable, it comes with penalties and fines. If it's very egregious, it can have a term of imprisonment up to 6 months. I've never seen that given out by the commission. But, you know, it's enough of a hammer. And honestly, I deal with real estate professionals almost on a daily basis. They're generally, and I know this is going to sound warm and fuzzy or like nonsense, but they really are hardworking people.
Yeah.
They work on commission. If they don't sell your house, they don't get paid. Or in today's world, after that big NAR settlement that we discussed a couple months ago, buyers' agents also work to get paid.
Absolutely.
And, you know, that's where we are. I would say that if you have – how much time do we have?
How much do we got, Tyler? How much time?
Tyler, what do we got?
2 minutes.
2 minutes. Oh, my God. I got the two-minute warning. All right.
Without timeouts.
All right. So basically, I just want to review this really quickly, and then we'll have to call it a day. This is the shortest hour of my day.
I know.
If you have a complaint against a real estate licensee that you're working with, you should first make an attempt to talk to the broker of record to see if there's an issue that can be resolved. You'd be surprised how accommodating most agencies are going to be.
Absolutely.
Because they don't want the hassle.
Right.
If those efforts are unsuccessful, you have two avenues. As I said, the first avenue is you can go to the Board of Realtors, and if the Board of Realtors, you know, feels that there's been a code violation or an ethical violation, they'll take it to a grievance committee. If that doesn't work, then you go to a full hearing panel, and then if that doesn't work, the Pennsylvania Association of Realtors can then have you file with the Pennsylvania State Real Estate Commission. And that's part of the Pennsylvania Office of Attorney General. They will investigate the complaint, and if violations against the licensee are found, they can impose sanctions ranging from fines to license revocation. And like I said, imprisonment and very rare fraudulent actions. That is the framework of how you file complaints against some of the issues that we talked about.
Merv, if you would, my friend, please give your contact information out if anybody is seeking an attorney or a law firm.
Sure. It's Haber DePaul, LLC. My name is Merv Haber. You can call me at 215-985-1515 in Pennsylvania, or in New Jersey, 856-722-0303. Online, on the web, you can go to HaberDePaul.com, and you can also find out about information there.
Awesome. Listen, I want to thank everybody for tuning in to Merv Haber's Real Estate Power Hour here on WWDB Talk 860. I want to thank our host, Merv Haber, for incredible information. Shout out to Tyler. Our producer. And really, you know, this is the fastest hour in real estate, no question. And the information is just priceless. I will be making a phone call as soon as I get off the air.
Look at that. I got a referral today.
You're damn right.
Oh, yeah. One other thing, Joe. One other thing. This is our last show before the holidays.
That's right.
I want to wish our listeners a very joyous Hanukkah, Christmas, Kwanzaa, and a very happy new year to all our listeners out there.
And for Merv Haber, I'm Joe Dougherty. Thanks for listening, everybody.